Hey, dear listener, Joshua here with a plug for our Patreon. Becoming a Fright School patron will give you the opportunity for exclusive access to bonus content, including videos, our secret show, book club, and even monthly online hangouts with us. That's right, we've been hard at work preparing all of this exciting content for you, including our brand new secret show, the After Fright School Special. Joe finally gets his revenge by making me watch his favorite films. Some of them will even be gag family friendly. We have four different monthly memberships available. The PTA Booster Club at $1, Just Auditing at $5, Full Time Load at $10, and the Faculty Lounge at $20. Every bit helps us keep Fright School going, and we are so grateful for any and all of your support. Join us over at patreon.com/frightschool. The class you never want to miss just got better.
Welcome to Fright School. Are you ready? Class is in session.
Welcome back to Fright School. Hello, Joe.
Hi, Joshua.
Ah, so good to see you in the flesh.
In the studio.
I know, right? We're back here in the West Craven Memorial Library. It's been a while because, you know, we have launched our Patreon. And
yes.
So we've been spending time doing a lot of our episodes via Zoom. So we'd have video content.
I know.
To bring to you, dear listener / watcher / Patreon supporter. All right. Enough of that. That was our plug for Patreon, # Patreon. patreon.com/frightschool.
Now on iTunes.
Four tiers available, just bursting with extra credit content.
Yeah.
All right.
Call us the mother of tears because we have four of them for you.
Mother of tears.
You like that?
Mothers of tears.
The mother of tears.
That was pretty delightful. See, this is what happens after all these years of Fright School. It starts to get in you.
I mean, we're still dressing our parts, though. Like, you know, yeah. you're like, what, gothic beach chic, and
yeah.
I look like I'm going to, you know,
see your boyfriend for dinner later.
Yeah, exactly. Family.
That's exactly what this reads.
Yeah.
I like it.
They're going to serve me up.
I tell ya. Joe, oh my gosh, so... We have to like dive right in this week because we got so much to.
This is going
to
be a 2-hour episode.
No, but I will say it was such a delight having you and Jimmykins over a week ago. Really, I mean, well, a week and a few days ago, right? Wink, wink. To have like
magic,
right? Magic to have the to watch Drag Race because it had been a while since we watched it together, and you guys mm-hmm. are actually watching the new All-Star season live.
Yes,
instead of waiting, because I know you're still working your way through the past season, so it's a little spoilery for.
Yeah, James felt that it was worth being spoiled because he wasn't. We were like 3 episodes from the finale of 11, and it was starting. And he's like, and I told him, I was like, we can watch it tonight. And he's like, let's watch it. I'm okay if I'm spoiled. And I looked at the queens and I'm like, you're only gonna really be spoiled for 2, like, because we're not gonna watch UK together. I'm like, you're only going to be spoiled for 2. And he's like, that's fine. And so then when Evie came out in the workroom, he's like, oh, I'm so happy she won. And I was like, good, because, you know, this is an Evie Oddly house. This is not a Brooklyn Heights house.
Right.
Although we do love her, but not in that season. So, and he was already, like, just over the drama, over Silky not Megan Nosh.
Yeah.
Like, I really can't wait for him to watch All-Star 6 when Silky comes back, and it's the whole, well, he's going to listen to this, so I don't want to say.
Right, right. We don't want to give too much spoiler away.
But yeah, it was just
so
much.
We spoil horror films, not.
Yes, not things, not Drag Race. Yeah, so it was just, it's just so much fun, and we're really enjoying it, and you're enjoying it, I assume, as well.
Oh, yeah, right. I like the whole thing. Like, I've said for years, not just about this, but like about all kinds of competition shows, where it's like, I wish
they all just stayed and got like points each week, and then that declared the winner. And that's how that chocolate show that I was telling you about did it with, I keep forgetting what his name is, Omri Ganache. I just made that
up. Omri, not Meganache. Oh, the Facebook the guy.
Well, Instagram, TikTok, all that kind of stuff. And his show was like where it was like a school of chocolate. I think that's what it's called, actually. And they got a GPA. And I thought, that's fucking brilliant. That's what I want to see. So I love that all the queens stay each week. So you get to see your favorite queens. For some of us, like seeing Jinx back is fucking wonderful. And the fact that we're going to see her at every episode is freaking delightful. And they're all at the top of their game. The drama, I feel, is pretty minimal. Like, I think they're really having to force it, because these people by now, like these drag queens,
they've toured,
known each other.
They know each other.
Yeah, so it's kind of like all the best parts of Drag Race without the bad parts, for the most part.
Yes.
If that makes sense.
Yes. I was listening to another podcast, and they were talking about how, I know, I listen to other shows. I was listening to another show, and they were talking about how, like, if you, when you read the think pieces about Drag Race and how much the queens spend on everything, right, on the looks that they bring and the thousands of sometimes tens of thousands of dollars that they're spending on their looks. And then like they get, so like they mentioned, Drag Race with, the All-Stars with Coco Montrese, she was there for like one day and then like had spent thousands on all the looks for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
It's like, once that kind of dropped it, like it totally makes sense for them to make it so that way for the rest of like all the other Drag Race, like all the other All-Stars, they do it this way. They do it where it's like you get to see all the looks, you get to fall in love with queens again, or, you know, see it. And you can, it really lives, because I think it started with April Carry On. But every queen now, it's like you get to the eliminated queens, they'll post like the next day what their outfit would have been for that challenge.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's something that I'm like loving that we get to see, because it forces them to remain on top of their game the entire time. And you can just see the consistency. And that's the other thing that we're getting too, right? Is that we are getting queens in this all winter season that are like super consistent.
Yeah.
Consistently good, consistently bad, consistently middle, whatever you want to say, the consistency is there.
Yeah.
And I'm just loving the no drama. I'm loving just like it is you look like you're watching like a true sisterhood.
Yeah.
And I'm just so curious as to like what may or may not be coming in terms of drama or other things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like the drama is largely manufactured, or it's kind of pushed, you know, like Jinx's whole thing about like the only strategy that makes sense is to block queens who already have a star.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree 100%. Like, I'm like, yeah, that is, if you're going to play any strategy in this game, that probably is the best one.
Yeah.
Other than making alliances and promising not to block each other. Yeah, certainly.
Yeah.
I understand that as a strategy as well. But the goal is to win stars, you know, like to get, you know, to the next level or whatever, or, you know, the final, whatever it's going to be. So, yeah, that makes sense. And to block people that are competition. So, yeah, you should take it as like a total, you know, compliment if somebody's like, I'm blocking you because like you're fucking coming up, you know?
Yeah.
So like, I can't have that. So I just, again, I think that makes sense. They're handing out cash to these people left and right. They're all going to leave winners. They're all going to leave, you know, again, the crown on Drag Race has never meant much if you are super talented and you appeal. So it's like these people already, all of them, you know, if not all of them are millionaires, most of them are close to it, you know, at this point. They're making tons of money.
Thousandaires.
They're thousandaires. You know, they're touring, they're doing stuff. Because I really think Trixie's probably, she's not on this, obviously, because she doesn't need to be. I love that. I love that whole story of like, no, I don't need to do that. I've got a makeup empire. I've got a music. I've got real music, like good music. Not to say that others don't. There are plenty of good music in Drag Race. But I feel like Trixie makes a brand of music that is different.
Hers is distinct enough.
It's like, singular. Yeah.
I think that we are 2 or 3 years away from Trixie Mattel showing up at the CMAs. Like showing
She played on Jimmy Kimmel. Remember, I showed like mainstream, like in drag, like a really good song. Like in my opinion, that This Town song is brilliant. Anyway, so I don't remember what the point was. Oh, the point is that they're all going to be fine no matter who wins. I really feel like that's the point. Even with the prize, because, you know, once you pay taxes on it and once you pay, I mean, once you're made whole for everything you spent going in, you probably come out.
Yeah.
It's a wash.
But, you know, like,
for the amount of money it takes to do drag.
But, like, the amount of booking you're going to get, the, like, the ability to increase your rate
the
after
tour.
That.
Can you imagine the tour that yeah. this will inspire?
Yeah. And, like, again, like, I'm really rooting for Raja. I don't think it's over for her yet.
Yeah, I love Raja.
But I have to say that, like, even if she doesn't, like, the fact that people are rediscovering Raja is yeah. worth it enough. I mean, yeah. she's going to have a Shangela glow up is what happened yeah. Yeah. with...
She's like the Kate Bush.
Yes. Yeah. She is running up that hill, girl. Oh, have you watched it yet?
No, but I am so thrilled.
Come on.
I am so thrilled at all the people discovering Kate Bush and being like so excited about her. I'm like, you know, and pushing her up into like the top 10 of iTunes, all that. I think it's wonderful. I am solidly not in the camp of like people my age and older who are like, you know, we were here first. Like, fuck off.
Like, yeah, don't gatekeep like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, don't gatekeep. Like, I never understood that because I see that with artists. And it's like, if you love them, you want them to be successful and you want them to make more art. And the only way they can do that is if there's not 10 of us following them, you know?
Yeah.
And that's been true for a lot of artists that, like, I, you know, saw at some tiny show with 10 people and now they, you know, tour the world and they're doing really well. And it's like, makes me so happy. I have an odd, proud, you know, pride for these people that I'm like, oh my God, I saw you when there was like 5 people. Nobody knew who you were. This is so wonderful for you.
Yeah.
I don't understand the gatekeeping. I don't get it. You know, and also like the people who are like, well, yeah, running up that hill is like pop and blah, blah, blah. Like, what about these other like albums of hers that are, you know, experimental or whatever? It doesn't matter. You know, let people discover things and let them find joy. Like, stop yeah. this, like, gatekeeping.
Noise. Because this is going to lead someone to discovering potentially the other music. I know yeah. that's how it is with me.
Oh, yeah, totally.
I mean, like, Joshua, you've, like, if the one, I mean, besides horror films specifically, like, you have introduced me to a world of music that I would have never picked up on my own if I didn't have someone to, like, ease me into it.
Oh,
and
I love that.
And I mean, we've talked about this before on the show where it's like, you know, I'm like able to own my like love of pop music because like I also am a fan of like indie pop music too.
Yeah.
And like just, and I think that there
there's
are people
so much
who
good
are
music out there.
Yeah, there's so much good music. And it's like, it's just really strange, right? That like Kate Bush, I found Running Up That Hill from Pose season 1.
Yeah, oh, very cool.
So I was like, okay, so I still had that, like, you know, media awakening, but...
But Pose, I think, is a little more niche at that time
than Stranger
Things, you know? Not to say, like, you know, whatever, yeah. like, you know, it just makes sense that it didn't explode there. It
yeah.
would explode
The
here.
Way that it is being used is yeah. just brilliant, and, like, the way that... The orchestra is like they're incorporating it into the score and all that stuff. It's just so gorgeous. And yeah, I love Stranger Things right now. I did not think it was possible for them to do like to improve upon the show as much as they did with season 3, because season 3 is still my favorite season.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm sad that it's ending, but you know, I'd rather they end now. And
yeah, they should go out on like a high note,
yeah,
you know, and in control before it gets canceled and then they can't do anything. Anyways, a point in bringing that all up, was, inguinal canals. Okay, so here's the thing. So last week when we were all hanging, it was delightful and wonderful. Cutting Up and Kiki, Drag Race, mm-hmm. Trixie Motel, also super fun. Recommend watching that.
Yeah.
We won't get into that right now. We'll talk about that maybe another episode. But what I love most about you hanging out is that, like, we realize so often, like, I feel like we just have to start setting up a recorder anytime we hang out and just capture everything we talk about in case we might want to use it. Because if I could go back in time and get that, like, 10 minutes of conversation back...
Mm-hmm.
To share with you, dear listeners, and watchers, viewers. I'm still saying watcher. It sounds like the watcher. You know, it's kind of creepy. I like
yes.
that. They're watching us.
I mean, they are.
But I think it would be so delightful for your earballs to hear me explaining to Joe and Jimmy Kins about tucking. So today's Fright School lesson from queerness and drag
culture
is, I mean, because I thought that you knew about what it was. Like,
I mean, like,
about actual tucking.
I mean, like, I understand it as a concept because it's like, okay, tucking is like, you know, you tuck it into yourself, but I thought it was more like a flaccid penis getting like duct tape underneath the taint, maybe also into the asshole. I actually never even thought about the balls.
Where the scrotum goes. Scrotum and the bits.
and so I was literally, I'm not ashamed to admit that I was, did not know.
Well, and I do wonder if you did know about this, dear listener. Hey, I think that is wonderful, and please let us know if we're not imparting any like great wisdom onto people. But yeah, when I was trying to explain to you, I was like, no, like they push them up into like
into the body
into like a cavity, like tucking, and not even just drag queens. Like that is something also that like trans people have done. There's like a whole conversation about like how to like properly, quote unquote, like, you know, disguise that area. So just,
I mean, like you, because like you.
I think I confused you with the word cavity instead of like canal.
Well, I mean, either it doesn't help either way. It's still confusing because like when I think tucking, I was like, you know, oh, like you tuck your shirt into your thing. I did not think you were like tucking someone into bed, like letting it slip all the way. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I thought it was, or, you know, I don't know what I thought, to be quite honest.
No, you probably didn't even like consider. I think most people just hear tucking and they probably don't really even think about what it means. To some people, this isn't, not everybody does this, but yeah. So before boys are boys as defined, limited, you know, very in a limited way by the patriarchies of science.
Don't get us canceled. Okay. Okay, yes. JK.
People in possession of testicles, so to speak. Before they have to drop, right? So when you're born as a baby, they're not there yet. They're not in like the sac. They're up in your body, and they drop at a certain point.
Living for your gestures right now.
I know. I'm sorry. it's so medical. Like, do you remember like going to the doctor and they would actually grab it, like checking to make sure they were there, sure they dropped? Because it's a condition if they don't, you know, if they get stuck in the body and they don't come down.
I mean, I block a lot of like my physical visits because I went to a Seventh-day Adventist clinic.
Okay.
I mean, not that they like
horrified because nobody talks to you about it. I remember being horrified when I was young. I was like 6 or 7. Another reason I do not like doctors and nurses and all this kind of stuff, because he came and he grabbed and he like reached down and he like grabbed him, you know. And I was just like, "What the fuck?" Ooh. Nobody talked to me about it. Nobody said
he grabbed you by the pussy.
He didn't tell me. He didn't say why. It was like later you find out it's like they're making sure everything's there, you know. Like it wasn't. It was not a sexual thing. Like it. There was nothing erotic about it. It was like, yep, they're there. Moving on, you know. Like. But anyway, so those canals are called the inguinal canals. They still exist in your body, and you can tuck your testicles into them. And in fact, sometimes if you like move a certain way or you're wearing like tight pants, they'll get pushed up in your body. You've never experienced that where you're like, what's, and it feels pressure.
No. How did we talk about, this. I was like, how did we get on the subject of this? And
because it feels like it's in your stomach or something. Like it feels like it's up in your
No. I think we talked about, we got onto this because I was talking about accidentally sitting on my testicles.
Oh yeah. And
yeah.
Pushing them in. Anyways.
No, not, well, not, I mean, or, I sat on them, but then,
right,
yeah.
Yeah. This is so, oh my gosh, this is so delightful. Are you horrified yet, dear listener?
So just for our Patreon listeners, Joshua is actually going to demonstrate tucking.
I'm going to get a video and we're going to do the whole thing.
Jeffrey, get the tape.
But yeah, you can push the button. So anyway, so that was the thing. This is not, I really thought this would be far more hilarious because the conversation we had was so fucking funny. I mean, I was like about to fall off the couch.
Do you have what you read to me that like,
oh yeah, I saved it on my phone.
I don't know how, like, you, it's found like here, some PDF or pamphlet about like, you know, how to tuck for the first time.
Safe tucking. What is tucking? Tucking is moving the penis, testicles, or both out of the way. So tucking with tape, tucking without tape. So those, that happens a lot too. Putting your testicles inside your body. This is what I think I read to you.
Cite your source, by the way. Hold on. Cite your source.
This is osu.edu.
Okay.
Or ohsu.edu. .com. Children's Hospital.
Oh.
Dornbecker Children's Hospital is what's part of the...
Interesting. Progressive.
Right. Who knows? This was just something I found. But yeah, so it just says everything. So yeah, you have two spaces inside your belly called the inguinal canals. They go here naturally when it's very cold, you know, so they tuck up.
Okay.
Getting in a tub of cold water can help you find the inguinal canals, as your testicles will naturally be drawn towards them. So yeah, so that's how. So you can... So that's the thing. Anyways, this, I don't know. This is now gone. I don't think this went the way I thought it was going to go. But there's your lesson today, children. If you didn't know, like Joe and like poor Jimmy, Jimmy Kins, I really wish I had a picture of his face, because he just seems so like, partially like, why are you telling me this? I did not need to have this information.
He was a non-participatory bystander in the conversation that we were having.
He was collateral damage.
I was just genuinely shocked that I had never thought, like, what about the balls?
Right.
Like.
Yeah, I think that's delightful. Anyways.
Like, yeah, because when you do it and then, you know, yeah.
That's a lovely lesson for people today to take with them, to tuck into your brain pan. When the next time something happens and somebody goes, yeah, what do they do with all the balls? That you will be ready, dear listener.
You'll
be prepared to say they go in the inguinal canals. That's I-N-G-U-I-N-A-L, inguinal canals. Tell them.
Is this a song? I-N-G-U-I-N-A-L.
But you'll be prepared with that medical knowledge. So if you're out at a drag show with your honey... or your friend or whatever, and they're like, wow, look at that. It's such a smooth tuck. Where does it all go?
Now you know. Her inguinal canal.
Yeah, yeah. At least those parts. And the rest is probably, taped between her ass cheeks. Hot. Or you can wear 7 or 8 pairs of pantyhose and just hope it, flattens down enough, you know. Build a smooth area.
Okay, Reed.
Oh my gosh, this was delightful. So we'll just stop there and take a break, and then we're going to be coming back and talking about 1980s cruising, keeping our queer horror trucking.
I just want to apologize. I'm sorry to everyone. I was very naive. Very stupid, and I shouldn't have put other people in danger. I am so sorry for everything that has happened, because in spite of what Joshua says, it's now all my fault. I insisted our listeners subscribe to Fright School on Apple Podcasts. I insisted they leave us reviews. I insisted that they give us a 5-star rating. And it's all because of me that we're here now and we're being hunted. I love you, Mom and Dad. I am so sorry. I only wanted to make good content for our listeners. I'm so scared. Joshua, is that you?
All right, welcome back. So yes, this week we are continuing our fun jaunt into queer horror. And today, I think, actually, is an interesting pick. So I chose it for a couple reasons. One, I thought it'd be really fun to watch with you. Mm-hmm. I was just like, oh my gosh, this is going to be delightful.
Yes.
Two, it's not like a traditional horror film, but I thought as queer people watching it, there's a lot of existential horror in it for us. There's a lot of like real life horror in it for us. And so, yeah, I thought that it would make a really good, you know, film to dive into. I wanted to start with this quote I read that I just thought was really, really good. Cruising. Here we go. This is from The Voice. Nathan Lee wrote this. Cruising is a lurid fever dream of popper fumes, color-coded pocket hankies, hardcore disco frottage, and Crisco-coated forearms. Nowadays, when the naughtiest things you can do in a New York gay club's light a cigarette, it's bracing, and let's admit, pretty fucking hot, to travel back to a moment when getting your ass plowed in public was as blasé as ordering a Red Bull. So, 1980s Cruising, starring, oh my gosh, Al Pacino's in it, Paul Sorvino, Karen Allen, who you recognize from some Indiana Jones thing.
Indiana Jones the Raiders of the Lost Ark.
There we go.
Which is the first Indiana Jones film.
Ed O'Neill of Married with Children fame is in it for a second.
Yes.
James Remar.
Well, hold on. Married with Children, Modern Family.
Oh, Modern Family. Yes. Sorry.
How do we know?
That's true.
Yeah. Modern Family.
James Remar from Dexter. William Russ, you recognized from something. Boy.
Yes, he was Alan Matthews, the dad on Boy Meets World, for those of you out there who care. The dad from Boy Meets World played like the gay friend of the supposed killer, and we'll get into that in a minute.
The guy selling the hankies was Powers Booth.
Oh,
who's
really?
Been in Nashville, 24, a bunch of stuff. So all kinds of people in like early roles. Because like, again, Ed O'Neill's only in it, I think, for like a minute. But we recognized him. You recognized him. So anyways, that's the cast. Directing this is William Friedkin, who made The Exorcist. So again, that's another reason I thought this would be really fun to watch. It's based partially on a book by Gerald Walker called Cruising. And also some murders that were actually happening around the same time in the late 70s that were associated also with the queer leather scene. Let's see. Written and directed by William Friedkin, I should say that. Distributed by United Artists. So, like, you know, this wasn't some underground gay film. At least it wasn't meant to be. It just, you know, I guess became one after everything. So, let's just dive in. Joe, what did you think about your first viewing of Cruising, which you'd never seen or heard of? No, you had heard of it.
I had heard of it, yes. I only heard of it because I remember reading something about Interior Leather Bar, which is the film about the making of Cruising, sort of, maybe.
So what it is, it's James Franco and whoever else is in it play film students thinking about or trying to go about recreating it.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but that's what I gather from the synopsis. We'll have to watch it maybe sometime.
Yeah.
Just to see. But anyways.
I had no idea what it is I was watching. It was definitely along the lines of like a true crime horror type of thing. Yeah. I think that if I was not queer, I don't think it would be I would be less inclined to think that it is horror, mm-hmm. but because of just how, just the like, the constant violence and all of that, the brutality of it, definitely makes that known. I'm really glad that we watched it together.
Yeah,
I probably won't watch it again. But this is one of those movies that like often comes around where you're like, how have I not heard about this? And how are we not making a bigger deal about the fact that, like, Al Pacino's in a leather bar and there's, like, guys rimming each other, taking right? hits of poppers.
Yeah.
And, like,
it's very explicit.
And not, like, you know, mainstream, like, though. A regular hit. Like, they're putting the thing on top that puts it under both nostrils. Like, they are inhaling the stuff. The swings, like, all of this stuff. Like, it's just how are we not making a bigger deal about this?
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm so confused by the film, so I'm really glad we're going to talk about it.
Yeah, I do think it's confusing. I don't think we're going to really clarify anything in this conversation. I wanted to bring it up because of a couple things. I think, like, So if you've not seen it, first of all, it is available on Arrow Films in a new Blu-ray edition. I think it was released a few years ago.
And the Blu-ray is spectacular. They did a really good job of remastering it.
It looks really nice. The remaster on it's great. There are some bonus features. One's called Exercising Cruising, which just cracks me up. It's like, okay, we get it. William Friedkin. But anyway, so if you haven't seen it, it's about these murders. A serial killer is like hunting, you know, gay men of a certain look, you know, usually dark hair, you know, young, nice builds. I'd still say slimmer builds, not like big hulking muscle guys, but
true.
You know, and Al Pacino plays a cop who has to go undercover to try to find the killer. And he kind of fits the look. He looks like a lot of the guys that get killed. And there's a lot of stuff in it that gets confusing, you know, about like who is who. And, you know, it's a little weird because he does like, they have so many guys that look kind of the same.
Yeah.
You know, so they kind of get lost in each other a little bit. Again, might be the point. Yeah, so he's just there trying to find a killer, and it's kind of a game of, it's not even like cat and mouse, it's just like, is it this guy? Nope, it's not that guy. Oh, it's this guy? No, it's not that guy. You know, I guess that's it until it ends.
Yeah, it's like, also like very, it's, I mean, I'm saying this, it's like really gratuitous, like there really isn't much plot outside of like, oh, he's trying to look for a killer, but they are... I feel like one of the things that they're doing, and again, this is probably, we'd probably have to read the source text to determine.
I tried to find a copy, but
what's going through Pacino's character's head, because it's like, he's conflicted. Why is he look conflicted? Is it because he's dealing with his own homosexuality? Is it because he's dealing with his repressed, I should say, sexuality, because he has a partner, a woman? Like, is he struggling with those feelings? Is he just struggling with the fact that he can't be honest? Is he struggling because, like, he's trying to sincerely stop a killer? He also, like, looks like he's, I mean, he's doing a pretty good job of enjoying himself and, like, you know, taking hits of poppers and a bandana and, like, you know, tearing it up on the dance floor.
Oh, my God. That's, like, that is the biggest crime in this film. That dancing. Oh, my gosh. I would have called 911. Like, is he okay?
Yeah.
The poppers are really hitting that dude.
Yeah.
We might need to take them away from him. Yeah. I don't know. And, again, that's... this film, before it even came out, so the guy who was reporting on the killings that inspired the film, Arthur Bell.
Okay.
So he was a journalist who had written a series of articles about, you know, these men that were getting murdered. Somehow got like a leaked copy of the script or something and read it and then like wrote about like, this is going to be the worst thing ever to happen to us. So go out and make it as hard as possible for them to film this movie here. So they had, before the production started, they got an agreement from gay bars that they were going to film in. They all changed their minds, turned them down, a lot of them. So I think they ended up recreating a bar, but it is based on, the look of the bar is based on a very famous bar at the time. I just can't remember what it was called. It was on something. I think they were given permission to like record there, and then they were one of the ones that like changed their mind.
Mm. The Ramrod?
Mineshaft. That's it. The film was intended to depict gay cruising as it existed at the mineshaft, but that bar is not named because it would not allow filming. Scenes from the movie were instead filmed at the Hellfire Club, which was decorated to resemble the mineshaft. There we go. And then they got people that went to the mineshaft to come and like be background extras. So anyway, so that's one of the reasons I think the sound is weird in the film, because they had to basically dub the whole movie because people kept showing up playing loud music, playing instruments. There are scenes where they're coming in and out, like the apartment buildings where like the people who actually lived there would not move, would not give, like they would sit, they'd make faces, they'd get in front of the cameras. Everybody was doing everything they could to like make this movie impossible to film because they thought their interpretation of the script. And again, to be fair, this is 10 years after Stonewall, so not like we still at this point didn't have many positive queer people on anything,
yeah.
You know, it's still, if we show up anywhere, it's because, we probably are gay and we're so tortured by that, we're murdering people left and right, or were, you know, tortured for other reasons or hiding out of the closet or tricking people, you know, whatever. Gay people, we don't have great representation at this time.
No.
Not that it's, you know, I mean, it's better. I don't want to, we'll get into that. So anyway, so they thought that that's what the movie was going to be, which I did too, going into it, you know, and in the conversation we were having, you were like, you know, is he like the murderer? And like, is that what's going on? So before the film even like came out, it had had all these protests. So I think that kind of led to it being like kind of really panned even after it came out critically, because I think people were really trying to read it as something that was extremely homophobic and extremely bad for the queer community. But I guess to answer your question, I still don't really know if he is supposed to be the kid. Like, the tortured part of it is like...
Well, so for those who haven't seen the film, right? So at the very end, when Pacino's character supposedly catches the killer because the fingerprints match,
right?
You get a moment where he's shaving and you like look, he looks into the camera, breaks the fourth wall, serves face.
Yeah.
And then like, what are we supposed to make of that? Right.
Right. And then it kind of goes back to like the boat on the Hudson, you know, which is, or was it the Hudson? Did I say that?
No. I think it's probably the Hudson.
Yeah.
Chances are.
Whatever. But it's like, kind of, that's how it starts, is like a boat out on the water that finds like a dismembered arm. And that, you know, kicks off the events of the film, and it kind of wraps back around to that. So yeah, the implication is, was he the killer the whole time? And that guy just happened to murder the one guy? So they find a music student, and you know he's gay because he's got books all about theater. That's a big red flag. So it's, ha-ha, we found one. But he does have a, you know, he murders a guy in a adult video booth, you know, which I don't know about you. Okay. I never did that. That's something I've never done. I've never gone to, I don't want you to like out yourself.
Oh, I mean, murder someone?
No, like, no. I've never gone to like one of those booths to like watch a dirty movie and jack off.
Oh, I imagine. I mean, you could do that at home. Like,
right. But people still do, but it's a kink. People like to go and do that in public. Like it's a thing. I imagine they smell terrible. I don't understand who would want to be there.
You don't know, so you... Yeah.
This is how I know, because I worked for an adult film company for 5 years. And anytime you went to where the sets were, it was such a weird smell, you know? Not even just because... Just everything, you know? It's everything that's going on. It's a weird thing. So I just imagine lots of bodies sitting in those seats day in, day out, doing their thing.
Sweat.
Everything else. Ugh, I just can't even imagine. Anyway, so the kid is, you know, he stabs a guy to death, puts a coin in the, you know, box or whatever to keep the movie going, and they pick up a print from that, and it does match him. So, but
and you know, you never see his face.
You don't. But all we can go on is believing in the world of the film that they did match the print. So if that's the case, he at least killed the one guy. Even if he is, again, this, if anything, this movie has like a late moment where it's like, because he's talking to like his dead father, so he's like schizophrenic, like he's, you know, he's hallucinating. So it's like, if anything, it's like, again, this is just another example of like somebody with schizophrenia is like out murdering people in a very controlled, like calculated way, which, is really hard to do if you have schizophrenia, but that's, you know, again, that's why like those kinds of disorders are so, it's so insane. Like when people are like, oh, schizophrenics murder people. Like, no, they're far more likely to be murdered themselves or be in other danger. But anyway, so yeah. So then at the end, it's like, he's got the guy, he takes his like hat and his glasses and the coat. Like he has all that. Either he took it from Stewart, but that was the guy's name, right?
Mm-hmm.
The kid, you know, who, or the guy who committed, you know, at least one murder, and he like takes that home with him. And so, yeah, you are kind of left with this thing. It's like, did he like inherit it? Now he's the killer. Like what is happening? Or did he kill everybody? Cause even in their fight, he's the one that stabs him. Like Al Pacino's character stabs him
first,
you know? And you have no idea if the kid was like protecting himself. Cause he thought, oh shit, this is a trick going bad, you know, which can happen.
Yeah.
You know, I've been in situations like that just cause people can get really weird, you know, sometimes, not totally like that, but
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When they freak out afterwards.
Yeah. Narratively, like, the movie isn't great. Yeah. And that's not the fault of protesters. That's not the fault of anyone but the writer. Like,
yeah.
Sorry, William Friedkin, but...
Yeah, it could be a little bit tighter. And I don't know if that's because I know they removed a lot of footage, but it sounds to me like most of the footage they removed was either... One of the things I read was that it was almost like documentary. Like, it was like they were just filming the people at the gay bar doing what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but it was so explicit because, again, they're just fucking, you know. Maybe not really, but that's basically what's going on throughout most of, like, those scenes is it's intensely sexual. And that is why it got cut, because the MPAA or whatever it is was going to give it an X rating.
I just, like... So, like, I've also never been, like, not to tell on myself all the whole thing, but I've never been in a situation where I've been in a bar like that. Like, I've never been to the Eagle. Like, I am fairly vanilla when it comes to things, but, like, it's just, I think for me, it's, like, the, again, I understand that this is a kink, so I'm not trying to yuck anyone's yum, but, like, for me, the kind of, like, implicit agreement that I'm walking into this space, and so, therefore, I am consenting to, like, implicitly consenting to witnessing certain things or being handled in a certain way, you know, it's interesting to me, but it's just, like, I've never, like, to have it be so blatant like that in a bar, right? Because, like, a bathhouse is a different story. Like, a bathhouse, you know that, like, you're going in there for that specific purpose, if that's your purpose to, you know, to have sex, but I just thought it was so strange. And also just, like, it just felt like staph. You know, like, it felt like staph infection. It felt like sweat and, like, I don't know. I just couldn't shake. Like, I don't care for too many unpleasant scents. Mm-hmm. I do like, you know, I do like to have, I do like to things to smell good.
We're getting really.
I know we're getting. Yeah. I mean, this is. Oh God, we're getting really real. I mean, like, that's not to say that, like, I.
You prefer cologne rather than natural. Like, is that what you mean?
No,
or, like, a freshly washed person. Versus, I mean, like, sweaty in a bar.
I mean, like.
In leather,
because I'm not going to say that because I do like a natural as well.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's.
But funny. Like, it just seems like, you know, I like one person's natural.
I see.
I don't need
it
to
might
see.
Be a lot to be in.
That's a lot. Like, yeah. I mean, that's the weird, like, the weird smell. I was recently watching a video with Katya on it where she talks about, like a straight man. Like, when she thinks of a straight man, she thinks of a dirty asshole, and it's like, and it's just like terrible. It smells like pure evil. Like, that's kind of what. It's not pure evil. Like, the, like, multiple bodies in a room sweating. It's like, you know, a general misanthropy. How about that? Not pure evil, but
you would have definitely been one of the clutching at your pearls gaze, protesting this film, huh?
That? I don't think. I mean, I would like to think I'm a little bit better than that, but who knows? Like, the lifestyle. That's a hard. That's. I mean, like, that's definitely saying something, and I'm a little too vanilla for. I mean, that's my personal taste, but
hey, that's fine. Again, that is another reason I wanted to discuss this film, is because we are now again in another round of respectability politics and pride. And so there's a big move of, like, kink shaming and the perpetual discourse over LGBTQ pride. You know, what, who should be at pride, who's allowed to be at pride, who's allowed to, you know, be part of the community, who isn't allowed, has been really raging again, you know, which we see this has been happening a lot more often, I feel, in the last few years. I don't know what's totally driving it, but again, the same thing, like, here, I feel like watching this movie, I felt like I agreed with, there was this, let me see, what was the other, oh, I think it's on my phone. There was somebody else that was talking about, like, they were like, at the end of the, when you watch this film, the people who are perpetrating violence are the police, are people who are trying to hold in their natural desires, whatever they might be, are surrendering to the status quo, are doing things because they think they're supposed to do them. So they're violent. The cops, you know, right at the beginning, they're using their power. They're, you know, to rape. They're raping these maybe trans women. We're not really sure.
Sex workers, for
definitely,
sure.
Yeah, definitely sex workers. Is heavily implied. Well, not even implied. I mean, they talked. They had just been arrested. They'd been arrested. You know, so it's like I have a hard time finding this film to be like homophobic completely. I mean, again, it's messy, so maybe there might be something to be said for that. But it's like I don't feel like I was saying to you, like when you looked at the two different worlds being presented, it's like all these guys that seem like really frustrated and unhappy in their lives. And, you know, they're beating up, you know, petty criminals and you know, like doing other terrible, boring things in their beige, boring outfits. Contrasted with like these guys who are dancing, who are free, who are kissing, who are having sex, who are like enjoying their life, who are like free, you know, and they're clearly the minority, you know, they're clearly being, you know, persecuted by, you know, the police and by, you know, other institutions. And like even Al Pacino's character has a great moment in the film where he's like, I didn't sign up to like beat up people because they're gay. Like that's not right. You know, he obviously, if he's got like a split personality or something, because he is doing the murders, then I don't, it's a weird thing to, you know, for him to kind of, you know, at once helping undermine like the homophobic tone of the film while also supporting it as the actual killer. But it's never clarified. So again, we need a strong rewrite.
Yeah.
But anyways, my point is that the kink shame thing. So Pride, like, the simple truth of like homophobia and of like attacking us is to say we are not having sex or being romantically attracted to the right kind of person. There's nothing more like that is so specific that Pride is a total embracing of the love that we have for each other, of the care that we have for each other, of the freedom we want, and of the communities we have built. It is about sex to some degree. You know, it's about free. It is about a lot of other things, but the oppression of us has been based on the fact that you don't sleep with who we want you to sleep with. You know, we're criminalizing, you know, sodomy laws, you know, those kinds of things. They criminalize sex. They criminalize specifically things that queer people, queer males especially, do with each other, you know? Again, I can't really speak to, like, you know, lesbian. That's a whole other conversation because of the fetishism of lesbianism by straight culture in particular. You know, but here it's like when people are like, Pride isn't about sex or it's not about kinks. Like, yeah, kind of, like there is a part of it that is. Like, it is about other things, of course. It is about our having the right to define family as we want, to define relationships as we want, to have the same rights as every other human or whatever, you know. So I just thought this was a really interesting film because it was attacked for this. And I think there's a part of our community that showed up to this to be like, that's not what we want straight people to see. You know, straight people are going to go to this movie and that's what they're going to see. And they're going to deny us our rights. They're going to go, that's what the gay community is. We were right all along. And it's like, I do understand the reaction to it in that sense because it was fucking 1980. Again, they made this in 79. It was released in 80. So, yeah, 10 years after Stonewall.
Yeah.
Of course you're, like, panicked if this is the kind of film. And again, if it was made today where there's just, like, this plethora of, like, queer representation, at least choices, Modern Family, right? You can watch that. And you can also watch the leather queers, you know, smacking each other around. And it doesn't mean that they're inviting violence. That was the other accusation made at the film. It's like, if you show gay men enjoying violence and fetishizing violence, that's going to give people permission to beat us up and to hurt us, which is insane.
Yeah, because consent. Because it's all done with consent.
Right. And again, I don't think we should be blamed for participating in acts and then being like, well, that gives straight people the right to like treat you however. That's just like, I don't buy into the whole like, don't call each other that because it allows, you know.
That's a very specific type of gaslighting.
It is. Yeah, absolutely.
We can't call each other fag because it's like, oh, we're giving permission for other people to call each other fag or whatever.
And I'm just like, no, like we're not giving wholly away, like, people, you know. I don't agree to that. I'm not, I don't say, like, you know, you get to beat people up because of how, you know, it's just nuts. It's insane. Again, I do understand because people do use it. You know, again, this, it is a reaction to very real harm, which is the next thing I was going to talk about within the context of this film, is that we're seeing, you know, exactly how our, I think there's a lot of horror here for us, you know, just yeah. as queer people, like knowing, like, and it's all tangible, you know, it's all tentative. Like everything that we have, like the rights and the things that we think we have now are very easily taken away, you know, and it's very easy for us to one day be, you know, going into a gay bar, get arrested, get beat up by some cops, and then just tossed out on the street. We're not that far away from that being an everyday reality
no.
in the past. And I don't really think it's that crazy to think that it would happen again. You know, it's cyclical.
Yeah. Especially like
at times.
Especially now with like, the attempts various governments are doing to like legislate trans people out of existence and
exactly yeah. precisely. I read a really interesting article about like drag, about saying like you know, children aren't allowed to be present in presence of a drag queen. Okay, right. So, well, what does that mean to mainstream, like civil, if a cop is going driving down the street and sees a trans woman who he decides just by looking at, he goes, that's obviously in his mind, he goes, that's a man in a dress, that's illegal, there's a child over there, we're arresting this person. It like negates the identity of that person. So it's such a slippery slope yeah. how quickly other people are getting to decide how our lives matter and how we exist. But you know, again, for the people out there who like Pearl Clutch, and you know, especially for like a certain segment of mainstream gay culture, especially white, rich gay male culture, who feels they're protected by their whiteness. Again, bringing it back to
James Baldwin.
You know, who believe that protects them. You know, they like were like, that was like with marriage, with so many other things, where it's like, well, we got what we want, we're leaving the rest of the community behind. If you don't want to assimilate and just find yourself like a nice bland partner and live your life like any old ma and pa kettle, then like you deserve to die and you deserve whatever state violence comes your way. I've cited, you know, I'm not, that's very general, but you know what I mean? Like that's what I hear from these people is like, you know, I don't really care about trans lives. That's not my problem. I wanted to get married and now I can do that. So I'm moving on. You know, it just feels like parts of our community are very segregated in a way, or not segregated. What's the word I'm trying to look for? They've made their choice. They've sided and they demonize the rest of us, you know, because we want to have pride be an expression.
Do you want to say traitors?
I don't think it's even traitors, because they're also doing something that they thought would protect them. And
yeah.
again, I do understand. I understand straight acting. I understand why people say it and why they do it and why they feel it's necessary. Mm-hmm. I think it's disgusting that we internalize that stuff and we spew it on each other. Of course, I think that's terrible. I don't think there's any problem with a guy who's like, quote unquote, naturally masculine. But to go around and be like, oh, I don't do like certain things because I'm a man.
Yeah.
You know, like it's weird. Like yeah. that, it's just a weird toxic masculinity yeah. in the gay community.
It's so
gross.
Fun that you should, I'm going to divert us a little bit.
No,
fun that you should mention straight acting, because like I am now like, I have now lived long enough to see the phrase straight acting be used as like a pejorative.
Right. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
and not just like among people that I know, among like people who I'm like acquaintances and, you know, people I work with and stuff. And it's just like, you know, they're straight. And I'm just like, wow, because that used to be like, you couldn't scroll past a profile on fucking adamforadam.com
right.
without like fucking straight acting. And that was the other, that was the
well,
other
then
thing.
Then it became Mask for Mask.
And then, yes. And then it became Mask for Mask. And
yeah.
so that's the other thing that's really, that kind of bothered me a little bit about this. And I understand, like, again, leather community, all of that, the hyper masculine performance of gender and performance of sexuality is part of the kink and is part of the culture. I get that. But it was also just like, it was uncomfortable to me, because like, I do not feel comfortable in hyper masculine spaces.
Right.
And even in a space that is like so overwhelmingly queer, we've talked about this several
yeah,
times.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
just like, I'm already like implicitly distrustful of a hyper masculine space like that. So
yeah.
in one sense, it's like, of course I'm not like verbally processing this out loud. I'm not going to be comfortable in a leather bar like that because of how of the presentation and the performance of this kind of masculinity.
Yeah. When again, I also think that like in this film, one of the notes I made was like, oh, you know, straight people made this because the music sucks. Like, I mean, not out of context, it could work in other things, but like, I used to go to leather bars all the time. Like, one of my favorite bars was called The Serpent. This was in Ohio. And there were three, it was the, what did they call that part of the town? Short North or North Side or something like that?
Shady Side?
Shady Side. No, it was North. It was North Side is where the gay bars were. And there were three of them. There was the disco, or not disco, what am I saying? The club. Like, it was Jacobs, and then it became Bronze with a Z, Zed. And they always played Top 40 and, like, pop music. And then they would have, like, 80s nights, 90, you know, those kinds of 70s nights, those sorts of things. Then there was the lesbian bar, my favorite, Bullfishes.
What was it called?
Bullfishes.
Okay, that's awesome.
They were Taurus and Pisces wives. I mean, come on. That just sounds like a delightful. Their logo was so cool because it was a bull's head with two fish for horns.
Oh, that's cool.
It was
cool.
So cool. Like, I just love that.
That is a great name for a lesbian bar.
And that was kind of like when I first went, I first started going to Jacobs because it was a gay bar. And then I walked over because they were like, well, there's a lesbian bar next door. Maybe you want to check out. And I go over there and I'm looking. Their jukebox was awesome. They had all the girls. So I like started putting music in and like everybody was like, oh, this is awesome. Yeah, play.
You went
song.
To the garden. You went to the mountain.
I did. Yeah. And I was like, I found my home. So I mostly stayed there.
You were closer to find there? Is that
We
that
would
what
bounce
is?
Between all three. So you're like, you go over to Bronze, you have a couple dances, have a couple drinks, you go over to Bullfishes, play some, you know, a little, you know, cool down a little bit, have some drinks, play some, you know, acoustic rock music. And then go across the street to the Serpent, which was totally a leather bar, exactly like the very dark, very mysterious. And then they had the patio because you couldn't really do stuff in the bar itself, but they could be like, well, it's dark. We can't really see, you know, what's going on. Like, I can't police people. You know what I mean? Like, that kind of thing. So there was the patio where people would go to, like, really do stuff.
Yeah.
So there was that one. And then, of course, here, the Eagle, which, again, is much like this. And you're right. There is a certain hyper-masculinity to this place. Very Tom of Finland. Very, like, that was definitely a thing. And that's a whole other critique that I have, you know, a whole other thing. But that's about critiquing the queer community itself for its own like toxic masculinity kind of stuff. Oh, but my point was, at any of those bars, you will hear pop dance music. So at a leather bar in the 70s, you would have heard like disco, like Donna Summer and shit. Not whatever been, they were trying to do, make this like some kind of punk rock bar. Like nobody would have been listening to this.
They would not have, I mean,
to
like,
dance to.
Yeah.
They're doing drugs. They're taking poppers. They're fucking. They want like fun music. The music in this movie sucked. That's when I really was like, man, straight people, that's who made this, who made these choices. Yeah. And I read a thing where it was like, he didn't like the music. I think Friedkin was like, what was one of the things I read, was basically said that. Like, I didn't like the music, so we hired these people. They hired a band to...
He didn't like disco? Like, he didn't like the music in gay bars?
Basically. I'm trying to find it. There was like a whole Bastard. Little article I read that it was like... they didn't like the kind of music that was like popular. So they hired this band who I guess they only used like one song from them, but otherwise it was, you know, the S&M clubs frequently played the same music you'd hear in regular clubs, including the likes of Casey and the Sunshine Band and Donna Summer. And I hated that stuff. I just hated it. So he went to Jack Nietzsche and found young punk bands to give a harder edge to the bar and the club scenes, which again, that is like an like that's not a realistic portrayal. Yeah. So of course you're watching these scenes with this hard music, and it's kind of like fucking Freddy's Revenge or
I was gonna say Freddy Got Fingered,
Nightmare on Elm Street 2.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's like that bar scene all of a sudden, and that's not like really what they were like. I mean, it would have been fun music, and that's what they played like back in the day.
You would have walked in and would have been like the guy would be getting fisted to like, you know, Bad Girls.
Heart of Glass.
Yes.
So again, like, so yeah, the music really annoyed me in this because I'm like, this is so not true for like gay culture. Like, we have like, you know, come on. We have great music that we would have been listening to.
Who wants to get fisted to punk rock? Not me. Like,
it just sounds, the whole thing. I'm like, that just doesn't, whatever. The other thing I wondered in watching this is, like, again, it does feel like a certain kind of fear that certain, like, straight men, who probably aren't all that straight, have of, like, you know, if they go in and they see, like, you know, gay people having sex or making out, then it's like, am I gay? You know, like, maybe I'm gay, you know, and it's that kind of, like, weird fear. So it kind of has that vibe going a little bit, which, again, I think harms, I don't feel like that harms gay people as much as it harms straight people and their freedom to explore mm-hmm. their sexuality. As I've said before on the podcast, I firmly believe, like, you know, sleeping with someone of the same gender does not make you gay, you know, or even queer necessarily. I mean, it really would depend on, like, if it's something you want to do more often.
Yeah.
You know? You know, but it's like everybody should have that, the freedom. And because our society puts so much constraints and so much pressure on who you're allowed to be, especially as men, you know, it creates this kind of violence against oneself, you know, that then, yeah, a lot of times, because we also can't, you know, especially then in the past, like, couldn't go to therapy and, like, talk about it. Like, well, I think I might be gay, you know, couldn't, like, work that out. You know, instead you're going and beating up gay people. You know, most of the guys who, like, harassed me in high school have all come out, you know, like, or I've seen out. I'm like, I see you, Mary.
Yeah.
You know, Coco Peru in hell, you know, she knows, like, when she gets there, everybody, whoever called her a faggot, will be there with her. Like, yes, exactly. So it's like, and watching this movie, I feel like, if anything, I feel like straight people sitting there like, yeah, this is what's going to happen. Look what happened to Al Pacino. He went in that gay bar and turned into a murderer. That's my fear. Or he was falling in love with Ted. It was, like, so romantic in moments.
Yes, it was very romantic. I was like, oh, like, of course you would fall in love with the writer. Right. I'm going to posit a different interpretation of the ending.
Okay.
I'm going to say that him, Al Pacino's character, and here's the thing, I don't even fucking remember his name. Like, I don't remember his fucking name.
Well, because he had two names.
Yeah, so he had, like Forbes
Steve
and Burns.
And John.
Yes, I mean, again... What is it?
Yeah,
what's Steve the line Burns from Steel Magnolias? It's like every gay man is named Steve John or Mark John or Steve, right? Is it something like that?
Something like that.
Anyway.
Now it's Brayson.
Steve and John. Like Adam and Steve and then, you know, a John like a fucking, you know. Anyway.
Yeah.
I posit that Pacino looks at the camera and it's more an indictment on our complicity. I probably could write a thesis on this. It's like our indictment in the complicity of the violence.
Yeah.
And so he's looking at us and it's just like, yeah, you sat there and watched all of it. And now you think that it's all done, but it's not because it's happening.
Yeah.
It's a step in. Exactly. And I'm stepping in and there's nothing you can do about it because you're just going to sit there. And like, we didn't even really answer the question, but you right. think you have the answers. And so I posit that it's like, yeah, maybe he is confirming that he is the killer and that we've just been fucked with, which, like, I also do not appreciate. I hate an unreliable narrator.
Right.
Like, I do not like, if you cannot tell from the beginning that it is that, like, because they showed the killer's face. That was the other thing. They showed the killer's face. So, and then they hired a bunch of guys. Like, you could remake this movie with, like, everyone who's ever been the leading man in a Ryan Murphy thing. You could have had, like, yep. Cheyenne Jackson with Matt Bomer, with Finn Wittrock, all of them.
All
the Chris's.
Well,
everyone.
Not Chris Pratt, obviously.
Well, no. Chris Pratt, well.
That's a whole other thing.
We're not going to get into it. Anyway, yeah, you can definitely, like, it's an indictment of that. And looking at you with that kind of defiant glare, like, you're not going to do anything. Because
right.
you've never done anything to support this community. And I'm just going to keep doing what I want. Or it's, you know, where were you when all of this was happening?
Yeah. I like that a lot. I think that gives the movie a little bit more credit than probably is deserved. But again, what we do. We're overcomplicated.
We overcomplicate it.
I actually really dig that. I think that's a really great interpretation. Because again, yeah, there is a lot of violence in it, but there's also, I mean, again, there's a lot of state violence in it.
Yeah.
you know, and yeah. we are complicit. So again, this goes yeah. back to, you know, this is why you should watch Martyrs. Because maybe that you would understand, because that is kind of the same thing. Like, mm-hmm. What are we complicit in every day that leads to death and leads to torture and, you know, in a casual sort of way. So, 1980s cruising. That was a pretty good conversation for, there's a lot going on in this movie that we could talk about.
Yeah.
And I think, and we did, we covered a lot. I was looking at my notes. I'm like, oh, I actually kind of hit everything, except shoes on the bed. You were so horrified at that moment.
I mean, they're having like dirty, unprotected sex in the St. James Hotel. I doubt they care about shoes on the bed, boots on the bed.
Boots on the
bed. Oh my God. But like, oh, that girl was ready. She like had her valise filled with dildos, her valise of sex toys.
Well, again, see, that's another thing. And watching, there were some parts of it that were really, I felt, true. You know, and again, because like, oh, sorry.
Do you have a valise of sex toys?
No. Oh. But I've been in places where they do, you know, like that. It felt very real. Like people come prepared to these clubs to pick someone up because it's like, hey, look at these fun things I have. Let's go play with them. You know, it's a whole thing. That's, you know, again, adult.
A whole thing. H-O-L-E.
Yes, exactly. Da-da-da. Oh my gosh, you just totally made me forget what I was going to say. Oh no, it was the person that, again, it was Peyton. I read this
Manning?
Article. No. Why cruising doesn't deserve its homophobic reputation. William Friedkin's subversive thriller is an indictment of the homophobic status quo that was unfairly judged before it even hit theaters. And this is by Peyton Brock, who I believe is a trans woman. A trans woman sat down to watch Cruising. I think she makes the point that, or they make the point that the leather community and the gay community, like that are in the film, a lot of them, those are real people that were like regulars at the bars. They joyfully put their lives on display for this film in a really real way.
Yeah.
In a really honest way. You know, this is like before like the AIDS epidemic would really truly kick off and like, you know, decimate. A lot of those people are gone, were victims to that. You know, this it's so it's like it's a frozen in time moment of like of a scene of a particular type of life that queer people were living in that time frame from like the 60s to, you know, the late 70s, beginning of the 80s before, again, the epidemic, you know, just ravaged everything. So it's very interesting that there's like all this accusation of homophobia while there is like so much queer joy on display in a way. Again, it is providing backdrop to a horror thriller, you know, serial killer story. But like I said, while we were watching it, it's like this movie isn't even really about that. It's about police violence. It's about state violence. It's about like those in power getting to dictate who gets to live, whose lives matter. Oh my gosh, look at this, you know? So I beg you, dear listener, check it out. See what you think.
Yeah.
Rewatch it. We've got some links in the description for some really good articles that I found that, you know, talk about the controversy surrounding it and, you know, casting it in a new light now, 42 years later.
Jesus.
Yeah. Wow. I recommend. I think it's a very interesting slice of queer horror in a lot of ways.
I think it's important. I think it's an important film because of, like, the reputation of it. And one thing that we'll continue to talk about until we're blue in the face is like the idea of like, okay, is this queer representation, even though like the writer director is presumably straight, Pacino is, you know, Pacino's a straight man. He's not playing he's undercover as a gay man, but like, we also cannot deny that there are queer people in the film, like that are representing that, like you said, that slice.
A very specific.
Yeah, know, very specific. Experience.
That was real and valid, you know, and that other queer people don't get to, you know, decide. And I guess I should apologize to queer people who choose, you know, to be married and have kids and like have that be their life. That's totally valid as well. I just don't think that we should take heteronormativity is the only way to exist in a valid way. And any other life outside of that deserves pain and suffering and deserves state violence. Because that's what's being said when you reject what's on display in this film, to some degree, I feel. And other lies. Other
the respectability
lies.
Politics
respectability
of it.
Respectability politics of it. So, yeah. Yay!
Yeah. So if you're watching this and you find, no, watching the film, and you're watching this, and you find yourself, like, you know, recoiling and shuddering, like, unpack that and ask yourself why.
Yeah.
Like, and ask. Just, you know, be get curious. We invite you to be curious.
Yes, absolutely. Fright School, getting curiouser and curiouser. All right, well, oh my gosh, are my feet really dirty? Can people see dirty feet? This is so fascinating. This whole new exploration. I've got so much to think about now.
All it's surveillance more than anything. Yeah, it's not. It's not like we are sharing. It's we're being surveilled. Is how I check my phone way less now than I used to check my phone during the because I'm also researching things, and you know, Joshua is also.
We do look a lot like it. Probably looks like we're not paying attention to things because we're looking up responses to things.
Yeah, so. I'm like slowly putting my phone out. People are going to think I don't like Joshua, and I'm not interested in anything. Yeah. He has to say, which is only partially true.
No, exactly. Oh, no, believe me. I've gone back and listened to some of our episodes, and you could tell. I'm like, oh, I wasn't paying attention to anything.
No, you definitely
I was, like,
are
trying to find something. Yeah. So I've tried to be better by preparing all that before, so it's like ready to go.
I love that you... Because I remember you were telling me, you told me once that, like, oh yeah, sometimes when you're talking, if I can't, you're not subtitled, right. So I don't process what you're saying, and so now I'm just like, oh, I think it's happening right now. Okay, it's happening. All right, it's fine. It's not. It's
but
not.
It's sometimes more obvious with the like if I'm looking at something happening.
Oh yeah.
Uh-huh. I'm like, oh, that was a great point. I didn't.
I know. I just. I'll make like a gem of a point, and it's like, oh, okay. Well, like,
yeah. It's just, that's how it goes. I mean, we could sit down and script the shit out of this podcast, and then
we wouldn't be us,
and you wouldn't enjoy this mess so much. Alrighty. Well, that was Cruising 1980, Al Pacino. Check it out. William Friedkin. As always, please like, rate, subscribe, all of those sorts of things. Spread the gospel of Fright School.
Patreon, you could watch, you know, if you're listening to this, there's easily, like, just like there's 40 minutes missing from the cut of Cruising of explicit leather daddy kink sex.
Yeah.
There is minutes of this, of the audio that you are missing.
That's
because
true. You're not going to get.
You're not going to get. Because
we left it in for you watching.
Yeah. So if you want to know, like, you know, if you want to hear Joshua basically, you know, backhand me like Joan Crawford.
Oh, no, don't tell people that. That's awful.
Christina. The ex.
Alrighty. Well, until next time, again, happy Pride Month. Demon. It's not what it, Pride Month, you know, we put together. Demon. Anyways, not the point. happy Demon Month. No, keep it going. Keep it gay. Keep it queer. And we'll see you next week. Good night.
Bye. Fright School is produced by Joshua Napier and Joe Farron.
Our intro was edited by Davey Boy Productions.
Our logo was designed by Jamie Channel Guzman.
Episodes are edited and engineered by Joe Farron.
Fright School is produced in terrifyingly beautiful San Diego, California.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.